We are back with the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with Elizabeth Lash Quinn, who is an American historian, who has written a book called Race Experts, and she's real concerned about the civil rights movement getting off track and not, if I may presume, fulfilling its potential. In the 40s, actually in all of the 20th century, the concept of social engineering has been very much a part of the pragmatic, go-do-it American spirit of figuring out a way to mechanize everything that we do and to engineer how people relate to each other as the Industrial Revolution really took over. This concept of social engineering that then gets a whole new life after the Second War and then gets picked up again with human potential and gets us into this therapy mindset that is everywhere. It's ubiquitous. It's like being a fish in water. In America at the moment, therapy, psychology is everywhere. But it didn't get us to the place the civil rights movement could have. Go back to that disconnect from the society to the individual.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember, the civil rights movement was a very religious movement. It had a strong spiritual dimension. Much of it really got galvanized in the black churches. And
a lot of folks who were the white folks coming in had come in from the churches and synagogues all over America.
That's right. Yeah.
And the church ladies were very important. The female piece of this is not irrelevant.
Very important. And if you look at the films from that time, the newsreels, you'll see with kings and other preachers speaking, whenever they pan out to the audience, it's almost entirely females in the churches. Mm-hmm. And that's a very important dimension. And the religious worldview from that time, now I think that, you know, religion and therapy have become very intertwined, so it's not always the case now, but the religious worldview was a very was one that emphasized on the moral responsibility of individuals and the tremendous possibility for change that was inherent in individuals if they chose to follow a spiritual path. And several historians have argued that the great power of the civil rights movement came out of that idea, that it was not in any way a movement that was saying that society had sort of determined everyone's position from outside, but instead was an attempt to change that position through the changing of many individuals combined. And that's really what happened, revolution.
That could be said of people, as I understand your argument, who are doing the therapeutic route, that, you know, you just change yourself and everything will be fine. I mean, that overflows the New Age friends I have, who just, you know, all we have to do is want peace.
Right.
And as long as I'm happy and I want peace, sort of, I mean, obviously that oversimplifies it, but that moral revolution of which you speak and this focus on the individual, the me-ness, the me-ness, that has come in odd ways to characterize the 80s and the 90s, the me generation.
But not to be overly pejorative about it, the argument is that, you know, I can't change the world if I don't change myself, and that there's an honesty about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of me going out and fixing you, you know, the first thing, my first obligation is to fix myself.
Yeah.
So this, you know, this is not a uniformly bad idea.
No, and that funny thing is that it's very closely entwined with a very good idea, and it can easily be mixed together.
Is that what happened?
I think that's partly what happened. If you think about the American religious tradition, so much of it came out of Puritanism and Congregationalism, and the idea there was all about the individual's capacity, moral capacity, and how we have to be fixated upon ourselves in order to know what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong, and to learn what the good path is morally. That's easily preyed upon, I think, by the modern therapy movement.
P-R-E-Y, preyed upon, not that other kind.
A little double entendre here.
that the therapy movements have then found something that is deeply American mm-hmm. and taking it down their path.
Let me frame yes. this. Again, I'm craving understanding. Okay. It seems that there are a lot of good intentions.
Yes.
Even and specifically in the therapeutic side, that people thought these tools and techniques, a variety of them, really would make things better. It also appears that there's a level of cynicism, that there are people that are just purely exploiting the opportunities, and I think over time that ratio may have changed. But there's also another group that you allude to, though less overtly, and those are the people that really want a revolution, that they were just so alienated from American society, specifically American society, that the point was not to respect the authorities, not to support the existing institutions, but to change them and to do whatever was possible to change those. And each of those has a piece of this, and they're mm-hmm. all sort of pulling in different directions. My impression is the money guys won.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And
I say that in the context of diversity training, which you spend the yes. last part of your book talking about.
Which is very real to a lot of people for whom... When you talk about the therapeutic culture, that's where a lot of people in corporations who have management institutes and diversity training and all kinds of training, this social engineering idea that is plugged into American corporations. Are those the money people of whom you speak, Bill?
Well, that's, I think, the current manifestation. You know, who knows what will be next, but it is a huge industry. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry. But that, you know, it's easy to sound like we're talking about history, and mm-hmm, then and then there's amorphous something, we went wrong, astray, and woe is us, but maybe we can get back on track. But there's some very tangible manifestations of the kinds of things you're talking about. That being one of them, and to me, in some ways, the most dominant, because it affects so many people.
Yes, right.
How do we get into that?
How did we get into that? Well, I think we. By adopting the idea of identity as the main goal, we stop short of where the religious conception would lead us and did lead us in the early civil rights movement. The whole question is, what is all of this concentration on ourselves and our identity for? What's it all about? In the human potential movement and the various movements for self-growth today, New Age movements, my sense is that they've lost sight of what it's all for. The self-obsession almost becomes the end in itself, whereas the individualism of the religious tradition was that reforming oneself would then allow us to bring about a better society, better in the moral sense. And that was a vision that was above and beyond any particular individual. And it allowed people to dedicate their lives to something outside of themselves, something beyond themselves, something bigger than themselves as an individual. Whereas the self-growth movement stops at the level of the individual as though that really is all there is. And, you know, it might be politics becomes something like, well, choosing peace. I choose to want peace, and that's really not enough. The next step in any kind of sense of real revolutionary spirit or rebellious spirit is to try to think about how you could actually achieve that.
We were talking about John Lewis in a break, and John Lewis, the first person I came across that said, quotes an African proverb: "When you pray, move your feet."
Mm-hmm. John Lewis was a great hero of the American Civil Rights Movement and is now in the United States Congress. That is a manifestation of what you're talking about. This is somebody who was concerned about his own moral position, but in doing that was concerned about the community. I wonder, as you talk, if this looking for my own meaning, and that when I am healed or when I get to my self-satisfaction, that people who long for community can't get there because they stop at themselves and have forgotten that this religious imperative of which you speak, the point of this is to be part of the greater community. Is mm-hmm. that what the disconnect is?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And I think that we do not have many of the skills that we need now to live in community. And we also don't have the sense of why we would want to do that. as long as we are left alone to pursue our own individual sense of what self-growth is, we often settle for that. Instead of dealing with the really hard questions, which go well beyond the race issue, and that is how we live together as a community. These have always been the key questions in any society. And I think in a democratic society, we need to think even harder about those questions. In an undemocratic society, those things are pretty clear. We live according to strict social hierarchies. We limit the rights of certain individuals. But in a democratic society like our own, I think we still have not really risen to the question of how we live together, how we develop those skills of sort of civic cooperation that we need.
One of the most striking things in your book, Race Experts, is as you describe what goes on in the therapeutic model, how authoritarian it sounds.
Yes.
Is that, am I reading you right?
I believe that it's very authoritarian. It scares me. The groups, and it's funny because it's portrayed as the opposite. It's portrayed as a very sort of hyper-egalitarian mode where a diversity trainer or multicultural educator will often introduce him or herself by saying that I am not the authoritarian here. I'm not an authority figure by any means, and I'm not going to teach you things that I know. I'm going to let you speak, and we will all speak. We're all on a par. And then what will happen is people will speak, but those who don't really fit the model of what is supposed to come out of those sessions will be ostracized, sometimes ridiculed, a lot of finger pointing. And if they don't admit to the overall scheme of what is supposed to come out of those, adopt the ideology that they are supposed to, they are seen as real misfits and sometimes cast as racists, or at least in denial of their own racism. In fact, they might just have some intellectual differences with the leader of the group or with the assumption of what exactly is good race relations. What do they really want to come out of that? So they start with some premises about race that aren't necessarily right.
Elizabeth Lash Quinn is our guest. She has written about the whole subject of racial etiquette, sensitivity training, a critique of New Age therapies as she sees them, in a book called Race Experts. We're all going to be back to continuing this conversation in just a moment. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with Elizabeth Lash Quinn in Syracuse, New York, and we'll be back shortly.